Gospel lesson for today comes from the 8th chapter of the Gospel of Luke. From the 26th verse, listen. Then Jesus and the disciples arrived in the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As he stepped out on land, a man from the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the wilds. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. They begged him not to order them back into the abyss. Now, there in the hillside, a large herd of swine was feeding, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When the swineherd saw what had happened, they ran off and told it in the city and in the country. And people came out to see what had happened, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So he went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You know, every time this Bible story comes up, I lean forward and pay close attention. It's always been that way. When I would hear the tale as a child, I was struck by the sheer wildness of it. Here's a crazy man, naked, living in a cemetery. There are scars on his wrists and ankles where he has torn off the shackles. Jesus lands ashore and he lunges at him when the teacher gets out of the fishing boat. And in a matter of minutes, Jesus and the wild man are screaming at one another. When suddenly over here on the hillside, a large herd of pigs runs off a cliff and drowns in the sea. It's a scene made for a movie, a horror movie. It's just absolutely wild. And sometimes when I hear it, I'm struck by the power of Jesus. He tells the evil spirits what to do and where to go. He has the authority from God to do this. For here's a poor soul afflicted by forces he cannot understand. When the Lord asks for his name, he says quite literally, "Roman legion, for we are many." I don't know if we should take that literally or numerically. A legion was a company of soldiers, either 4,000 or 6,000 soldiers, the kind of soldiers who were occupying the land. They were there to keep the peace, and the Roman peace was kept with violence, fear, and intimidation. These were the kind of soldiers who would just as well crucify you if that would keep everybody else in line. They were terrorists in uniform. Apparently, their military presence is driving one of the local men out of his mind, out of his house, out of his clothing and into the tombs. And Jesus makes him well. That's amazing power. We saw it in the Sea of Galilee right before this story happens. Jesus was out in the boat with the others when a storm blasts in, swirls around, waves are spilling over the sides of the boat. The wind is furious. The Lord, why, he's taking a nap. They nudge him awake and say, "Master, Master, we're perishing. Don't you care?" He opens his eyes and says, "Hush, be still." And he's not talking to them, he's talking to the storm. Suddenly there is a dead calm. And they say to one another, "Who is this who tells the storm to shut up?" He had that kind of power, so there's no question he could drive away a legion of demons. He had that kind of power too. Calm the storm and save the disciples. Calm the demons and save the man. Jesus, the teacher, is also the Savior. And this is the kind of story that demonstrates his power. But as I've lived with the New Testament for a while, I also understand this is a story that the first group of Jewish followers would have loved to tell. Because they didn't have a lot of time for pigs. God said, "Pigs are unclean. So no bacon, no barbecue for you." Of course they're unclean. That's why the demon said, "Send us into the pigs." Since they're unclean spirits, they drove the unclean pigs out of their minds too. When that large herd of swine was intoxicated with evil, they dashed down the hill and entered into the sea, and a first century Jew would have said, "Ha, good riddance, no great loss." Obviously, they didn't own the pigs. Those pig farmers would have been Gentiles. In fact, if you look at the map in the back of the Bible, that pig farm, like that graveyard, must have been in Gentile territory on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And according to the Gospel of Luke, this is the first and only time Jesus steps onto Gentile land. It's the first and only time he heals a Gentile man. And it's the first and only time he destroys the livelihood and possibly the career of some Gentile swineherds. Call it, if you will, the high cost of healthcare. For somebody to get well, something else must go. A man is healed while a bunch of farmers lose their herd. It might be a surprising picture, but I tell you, it's still with us. My friend Tony busted his wrist in a car accident back in March. Recovery is going slowly, very slowly. I took him to lunch last week, and he told me how much the medical bills are. Two aspirin in the morning aren't going to fix him. Where are my family? We have two addiction therapists. One works with veterans who have seen trauma. The other works with affluent professionals who self-medicate themselves toward the abyss. I asked at the dinner table, what would it cost to make them well? Not just the price tag of medical care or residential treatment. And they both said in unison, those folks have to bid farewell to substances that have become part of their souls. Some would rather die than give up drugs or drink. There's a high cost to getting well. We see the same theme in the great stories of good versus evil. There's always some cost for good to win. Harry Potter takes on Voldemort. They hurl lightning at one another as the castle crumbles around them. Or in the endless number of Star Wars movies, for good to win over evil, a lightsaber must flash or a planet has to blow up. And in our own Christian story, there's a man killed on a cross to benefit the health of the world. That is our central mystery. It was human evil that put him on the cross, and it is his death that defeats the human evil. It's a high cost indeed. But in the account for today, there's one more thing, one more factor, something more striking than power pigs or the cost of it all. Did you notice? When the man is healed, freshly clothed in his right mind and sitting with Jesus, the people in the nearby town come with a sad and pathetic message. They come to see Jesus and they see the wild man now settled. They hear the story of what has happened. So they ask Jesus to get out of town. With a single voice, they say, "Please go." Now that's really sad. The wild man was out there howling at the wound, scaring every new kind of mourners who had come to bury the dead. They got used to that. They could tolerate that. But now when that same man is healed and restored, they are really unsettled. They're unsettled by health. It's worth reflecting on this. Why did they want Jesus to go away? Certainly there's the economic factor. There was money lost by the pig farmers. Huge economic loss, to say nothing of a good portion of the food supply for that Gentile town. If Jesus is going to stick around and heal somebody else, what's he going to destroy next? And considering that the herd of swine was very, very large, in one account it says 2,000 pigs, we can guess those farmers were pretty well off, which suggests they had some influence in that town and in that region. Jesus, get out of town. You're not good for business. We can't have any more healings like that. It'll hurt the pocketbook. Certainly that was part of the conversation. But at the heart of it all, Luke says there is fear. Great fear, or in the Greek phrase, megaphobia. The people are afraid. They're scared of the wild man, or specifically scared of the illness that was inside him, but now they're doubly terrified of the power of Jesus to make somebody well. They want him to leave because God has come way too close. When Jesus first meets the wild man, remember what the illness inside him has to say? "What are you to do with me, Son of the Most High God?" And the illness wants to call all the shots, because the illness knows that the Son of God is stronger, holier, kinder, and healthier than the parasitic hold that it has on the host. The illness calls it torment, but for Jesus it is healing and restoration. Christ comes to make people well. Does he ask permission before he begins? No, not in this case. He goes to work, for the work of the God of life is to give abundant life to those who are infected or inflicted or shackled by something they cannot control. True healing, however, is disruptive, because it means the sick man cannot howl and whine anymore. He'll also have to put on clothes. He'll have to grow up and get a job and give up his status as the wild man and move away from the tombs and back among the normal people. Meanwhile, the so-called normal people aren't so sure. They want him healthy, and they certainly don't want him back among them. It might make them look not so normal. One thing's for sure, they certainly don't want Jesus the healer to stick around any longer. Get out of town, please. You know, we read the Bible together. As I say frequently these days, it is the Bible that reads us. We read how Jesus comes to heal and restore, possibly in every corner of our lives, but it's a healing most likely of a man with a troubled mind. That's the text for today. We We read that, but what the Bible reads in us is a strong aversion to the only one who can heal us and what we would have to change to become well. Is there in that passage from Isaiah 65 that John read? God gives an elbow to the people and says, I came, I'm right there in front of them, I love them and want to help them, and what do? They ignore me. You know, if the world wanted to be healthy, it would have made that decision a long time ago. Somebody would have gotten rid of potato chips, which Barbara gave me two bags of this morning. They would have gotten rid of cigarettes and other addictive substances. All those things would be sent back into the abyss. And every week or two, we also hear in the news these days about some tormented soul doing terrible things somewhere else. So we lock our doors and pray for mercy and murmur, I'm thankful it didn't happen here. You know, we really don't have to live like that. We don't have to be fearful. We don't have to be held captive. We don't have to be immobilized by a megaphobia. We could live with freedom, grace. More to the point, we could make decisions every day that create life, enhance life. Decisions that declare that Jesus is more important than the pigs and the money or the beating ourselves with stone or living among the tombstones. We don't have to push him away or ask him to get out of town. We could say, Lord, stay among us in your strange and awkward presence. Stay among us and make us well one at a time. Because that is what he wishes to do. It is the will of God to make us well. There's a scene in the new movie Rocket Man that sums it up for me. It's the opening scene of that biographical fantasy of singer Elton John. The chairs are circled up, looks like a church basement or something. It's a 12-step meeting and it's underway. The door blows open and here comes Elton John. He's skipping out of a sold-out show at Madison Square Garden, and he stomps in to interrupt that 12-step meeting. He's still in his stage costume, a red devil with styrofoam horns, of all things. He's belligerent, he's mouthy, he's angry, and he is deeply conflicted. He says, my name is Elton, and he yells, and he makes a fuss. And then, in a near whisper, he says, and I want to get well. With that, he tells his story. And because of that, his story has a future because he wants to get well. It's the best way I know to cooperate with the power of God, to pursue our own health, and to work on improving the health of one another. That day in the land of the Gerasenes, it was the townspeople's fear that pushed Jesus back into the boat and across the sea. But that's not the end of the story. Did you hear what the Lord said to him? The man who was healed wanted to get in the boat and go along, but Jesus said, no, stay here. Tell these people what God has done for you. Tell them about the change in your health, about the change in your perspective. And stay right in the middle of them. Go right into the center of the community. Tell everybody you meet that God's great desire is that we would be well. You know why he did that? You know why Jesus did that? Because the one thing they will never be able to dispute is the presence of someone who has come back from the tombs and lives to tell about it. May that be so. May that be us.